This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Brock Rahm.
Nope.
And Darius Thomas.
This is going to be a little different than how we usually do it.
As the old saying goes, many are called, but few are chosen. But imagine being chosen to do content for the late, great Hall of Famer Kobe Bryant. That is a part of Janine Williams' story. As a freelance content producer, Janine has had the great fortune of being in the right place at the right time. As we continue our spotlight of Black creatives for Black History Month, Janine shares why taking a chance on moving across the country actually paid off.
All right, Brock, go ahead.
Yeah, we're going to do the thing.
All right, let's do the thing, and let's do it at 39.
That was quick.
Oh, that was so fast.
I know. I didn't keep you on your toes.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller Effects, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit Baller Effects on YouTube and get started today.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Creative Sports Podcast. We continue our Black History Month spotlights with creatives. And today I'm excited to welcome Janine Williams, an extraordinary freelance content producer. And she joins us today. Janine, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat with you guys.
So I'll just jump right in. Let's talk about your journey to where you are now. Where did it start and how did you kind of get here?
I would say that's kind of long-winded.
They all are.
I think as far as like becoming a quote-unquote creative, I want to say it kind of started after college when I went back to school. I went back to school for graphic design. I used to do graphics a lot when I was younger. And I kind of wanted to learn more of like the corporate side of things. So I ended up going back and getting my AA in graphic design. And during that process, I ended up purchasing a camera, and just kind of messing around with it. I shot a lot of just like shows and events and stuff like that, things for my friends. And just was kind of off and on with it for a while. And then, originally I'm from Wisconsin. I moved to California in 2013, I believe. And probably shortly after, I had this feeling of like wanting to kind of get back into hoop. At the time I was doing graphic design for USC. Actually my basketball manager ended up getting the Dobo job there. So she connected me. So I worked with the women's basketball team with my best friend that I call my brother. And so we were kind of around sport a bit, but not in the capacity that I am now. And fast forward to probably around like 2016, 2017-ish when I got back into being a little bit more consistent with the camera. I wanted to find a way to get back in basketball. And so I reached out to like a travel ball team that was in Orange County, and just asked if they wanted to document some of their kind of behind the scenes, more storytelling. And once we did that, we kind of came on board as their content team. And at the time, I had no idea that it would turn into what it is now. Again, I wanted to storytell. I wanted to do more documentary style stuff. Ended up taking pictures at one event. And we went to, I think it's called Bigfoot Hoops. It was like a big tournament in the summer. And at the time, it was like Cole Anthony and all these guys all playing down there. And so it was just a crazy amount of talent there. I think Bronny was like in seventh or eighth grade, Mikey Williams, all these kids. And again, for me, because I hadn't been in the space, I had no idea that like even this West Coast basketball culture or even just as a whole was the way that it was. And so after we kind of put out a little bit of content from those events, honestly, it was just kind of a genuine thing where people would just reach out to us. Reach out to me, say, hey, do you want to come shoot this? You want to come shoot that? And the trajectory just kind of like took off just because, again, how active that kind of hoop world is out here in California, and then alongside other things. And so that kind of started it. And then I think over time, just constantly getting into it, constantly like putting in that 10,000 hours, finding ways to like add my creativity to the things that I did behind the camera and stuff like that. And then again, as a hooper, as an ex-hooper, like I just love being around the sport. And so I'd get booked for like brand gigs and just all these different things. And I think maybe over the past 5 years, I've kind of fine tuned a little bit more who I've wanted to become in this space. Definitely want to do more production, definitely want to do more doc style content. And I think one thing that I also realized too was there was a lack of a creative presence in the women's sports side, specifically women's basketball. And that was something that I want to say like 2018, 2019, I decided that I'm going to come to the women's side and stay. And not necessarily jump all over the place or look for kind of a way out. I wanted to be one of those people that came and was here because I wanted to see the end goal of being able to kind of elevate the women's voices, elevate the sport more. So I've been doing specifically women's basketball content probably consistently since 2019. And I think it's just kind of grown. And then I worked with Kobe Bryant, me and my brothers, we did the content for him and his mama's team. And so I think that was also kind of something that solidified that, like, I need to be here. And that's why I've kind of stayed. So predominantly doing women's basketball related content. But obviously, you know, I do everything, whether it be brand specific, working with clothing brands, shoe brands, working with entrepreneurs, event operators, just all these different things. There's a huge spectrum. But I think you'll probably predominantly see me on the grassroots women's side, probably high school, as well as college and WNBA. So, and now we're here. And again, it's kind of just still shaping what this looked like for me. I've done a couple cool things that have been a little bit different out of my element. Obviously, I've started my podcast, and that's been kind of a different version of me because I'm not usually in front of the camera. And so, yeah, I'm just kind of taking it as it goes. But yeah, this is how we got here.
Can you talk a little bit about, you know, obviously you have the sports background, but, you know, what really shapes your creative style? Is it a lot of sports content? Is it a lot of content outside of sports? What do you look to for inspiration?
It's actually more stuff that's outside of sports. So when I first got into film, it was really more movies. And so, like, a lot of times I was into color. I was into just the different types of lenses that were being used, the different ways that people were portraying the imagery, like anamorphic, all these different things. And then I think it kind of transitioned a little bit into music videos, because that was something on a small scale that I could shoot or be around and watch tutorials on and stuff like that. And at the time, too, when I would look for sports photography or sports video content, there was none there that you could kind of learn from, like, what are the settings people are using? What are these things? And so I always got my I always got my inspiration from, like I said, film, music videos, a lot of travel videography and photography, stuff like that. Just the different ways that color is used. Like I said, the different choices on lenses and how shots are composed and all these different things. And I tried to take the stuff that I kind of learned from that and brought it over to sport. And so, like, even simple things like color. So when I first started shooting basketball, I did like this teal and orange thing a lot. And it was something that was huge in like travel and huge in portrait photography. And so I kind of transitioned that into sport. And then when I felt like that was being overused, I kind of backed out of it. And I focused more on like composition and really focusing on kind of zooming in on the subject matter and also shooting like super wide and the differences between the two. So it never really came from sport. And it still really doesn't. Like, obviously I'll see things and I might get some inspiration from some cool things, especially now that Instagram and social and TikTok, like, you see so much more of it. But I don't really watch it that often. I'm usually learning from now just people that do film and stuff like that, just because I just feel like sports is typically behind when it comes to implementing certain things. And again, long term, I don't necessarily want to be in sports in the way that I am. And so I don't really want to train my mind to think, you know, fast, crazy edits, you know, the stuff that you see now. I want to think more storytelling and long form. So that's where I get a lot of my inspiration.
Cool. Let's nope. We're going to talk gear here before you guys jump in, because she talked about gear. We're going to talk about gear. So let's calm down.
And I'm not like a gearhead, but
that's okay.
You know.
That's okay. Yeah. But no, let's talk, like, just one quick question here about lenses. What's your favorite lens right now? What's your, like, go-to lens, you're down baseline, you know, WNBA game or whatever right now, what's your go-to lens?
I mean, probably the most often is the Tamron 35 to 150 just because of the range. But if I say like my favorite, I'm usually taking like my Sony 50 1.2, or I also have like a Zeiss 85 that I take. I really love like the bokeh in it and also like the sharpness. For a while, I shot a lot with the Sigma 35 prime. And kind of, again, it's tough because it's like when you're shooting sports, you kind of have to have like that main lens, but it's not necessarily my favorite. I just have to use it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get it. That Zeiss is nice. Yeah. Nothing quite looks like a Zeiss, especially.
It's crazy looking. So again, that's another reason why I want to try to shift to more of the production side, because, you know, I've been in sets where we're using different types of cinema lenses and just like messing around with different things and just seeing how much you can change and craft a shot, you know, just simply with like the lens alone and the lighting. So that's a big thing that I want to kind of transition into the next couple of years.
What camera did you start on with your, you said you bought your first camera. What was your
first camera? So I started with a Canon T3i. And then after that, when I started doing a little bit more video, I transitioned into the Sony a7S II. And then I realized that it sucked for photo. So then I paired that with a A7 R3. And then I started to realize that the A7 S2 sucked too. So then I ended up buying the A1. So then the A1 and the A7 R2, or the A7 R3, were like my two, kind of like my hybrid in my main video. And now I shoot with, I have a A7 IV. I have an A1 still. I shoot with the FX6. And then I have an A7 S3. And one of the things about me is I am like a super tech kind of nerdy person as well. So like, if I can make a justifiable reason to buy a new camera or buy the new something, I'm going to do it. And so I'm just sitting here with all these cameras just for no reason. But I mean, they end up coming in handy when we do have a lot of bigger shoots or where you have to multitask and stuff like that. But my main two bodies that I shoot with the most would probably be my A1 and my FX6.
So your hooping days. Right. Mm-hmm. So you said that you started out like, no, you know, wanting to do design and all that beforehand, you're hooping. How much was your athletic helping with the creativity? Like, I know we talked to a lot of former athletes that, you know, it helps them in interviewing. It helps them in creating because they know. You know, especially if you're working with like top notch athletes, like, you know what they're going through, like, you know, the day to day schedule. So how much of that were you taking as an athlete to kind of pour into the creativity from the structure and all that?
I think in the beginning when it was more graphics, it was just about like looking cool, to be honest. And so back then, at least in my proximity, you didn't see like a lot of crazy graphics, but you just saw like, you know, it'd be something cool where like I may make a fake Nike graphic, mm-hmm. you know, like, and I might imitate the LeBron Nike graphic, right? Where we're talking about greatness and stuff like that, using different color fonts and different font styles and stuff like that. Really, again, to just have something cool for myself and like my teammates and stuff like that. And as I learned a little bit more about it, like that kind of changed. When I picked up the camera, though, I think the thing that I realized sport helped me the most with and still does now is just the perspective. And I hate to say it because it's not like a knock to anyone who didn't play. But like we all know that there's people who are technically sound in using a camera. Someone's going to be able to come in here and tell you a bunch of things about how the camera works, how the lenses work, how to do XYZ, how to set up the lighting and all that. And I'm not going to lie, I can't tell you every single thing, right? But I think when it comes to telling the story and when it comes to also just like understanding the players and their energy, whether it be football, basketball, whatever, when you've played that sport, you kind of can speak that language and you also can start to craft a story around the things that you can expect in game as well. And so when you're thinking about like now, for example, if you take someone going up for a dunk, right? You almost, if you've played, you know exactly what they're probably going to do after the dunk. You know what to expect. You know where to leave the camera, how to get the extra shot. You know how the bench is reacting. You may even know, you know, how to expect the crowd may react. And I don't know if I would have had that had I not played sports. I think I always attribute it to my eye and my perspective, because at the end of the day, like, I have something that I'm trying to capture that either I know we never had before or I know is like a key moment. I did a podcast recently with Aaliyah Armstrong, who ran track for LSU. And one of the things that she talked about was like the praying before you actually step up to the blocks, right? And so, again, it's those little things that seeing something like that, let's just say it's in a documentary, that is a huge moment that can tell like the story of her triumph in the end. And if you don't have that because you don't know what to expect, you know, you could make or break a moment. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it's all the little things. And I think an accumulation of all of it kind of just adds to my own personal perspective. One thing that I'll say that I stand by is like every single creative on this planet is going to be different just because of how they view the world. It's not about the tools. It's just about how you see the world. So I think, you know, having all these different things in my bag of like, just lifestyle, where I grew up, my brothers played basketball, my brothers played overseas, my nephew played in the NBA, like all my family can draw. It's just like there's all these different things. And so the way that I show up just looks different than the way everybody else showed up. And I'm not from California. So when I came out here, one of the biggest things that I noticed was like, no one's really wowed by any moments because they're so used to it. But when you have somebody like a Bronny or some of these hype kids, they're just chasing like the hype. Like they're forgetting about like the shot, right? They're forgetting about the moment. They're forgetting about overall like the art form. And so when we actually got into the space and would be shooting games, we genuinely were shooting from the passion of sport, genuinely shooting from, I want to tell a story. So a lot of times, honestly, our shots looked so much different than everybody else's because everybody else was shooting like paparazzi. You know what I mean? And we were shooting just to tell a little bit different of a story. And I think now that social is such a big thing, it's a little different because now you see it more. You see people doing that on the sports side. Like I watch a ton of college football stuff because they do so much more long form than I think like college basketball and stuff like that. And just like the way that they tell the story, even like who they choose to do a voiceover. And I think like, again, if you didn't play, you don't know that this person's voice can change or dictate, you know, how something is delivered. I just watched like the doc on, it was like a short doc, nothing long, maybe like 10 minutes on the arrival of the Trojan at USC and like how that came out. And so, again, like you think about some of these masterpieces and I just feel like everybody's inspiration is going to be different. Everybody's perception of it is going to be different. But the one thing that I think separates athlete creatives or, you know, former athlete creatives is, again, that we played. I think also, too, in like interviewing, people are more comfortable. Because again, you kind of lay into them a little different when you're trying to get something out of them versus the person that's like the really great interviewer. You know what I mean? And being able to get that camaraderie, being able to get athletes to kind of, you know, let their guard down. You know, I think you get a little bit more out of them, especially on the women's side, because no one's going in there really wanting to film them and tell their story. Right. And so when they do see people, they generally are happy. And that's another thing that I'll say, being a woman is a little bit different than being a man in the space, is I feel like when I'm around female athletes, the appreciation for you being there is a little bit different. And on the male side, the expectation of you being there is higher, right? They're like, they know you're here to do X, Y, Z. And so it's not always like kind of this wall up, but it's like, we're used to this, right? And so there's not always necessarily that warmth and that great reception, unless it's like a super intimate kind of environment where like you've built some rapport. But for the most part, it's like it's you know, it's kind of cold initially. And I think with women and young girls, when we've been in the spaces and been there to capture content for them, it's been a little bit more warm and welcoming. And I think that also brings out some cool things in the content too.
A couple things I want to go back to, because that point especially, but we've talked about this a couple times on every creative is different. You said that, right? Because mm-hmm. everyone sees the world different. And I've been in places where people try to like push you into like, oh, this is the thing that we do. And it's like, you don't have to judge it on the same spectrum. You don't have to cover it the mm-hmm. same. Because if you're just there for the hype train, and that's why I never wanted one, because the money was never good.
Yeah, and, I mean, like, that's
covering,
the other thing.
Covering all these camps and stuff. Like I did flag football, and that was never came. But some people want you to cover it like as a hype train because they're trying to make just social. And if you're going in there from a storytelling perspective, you're never going to be on the same page because they're just wanting to see, oh, I saw them do this. It's like, well, go get them.
Yeah. Straight up. And the thing is, you can do both, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can do both. So that's the way that I honestly approach, especially when I'm shooting like grassroots stuff, is I lead with not necessarily all the way doc style, but I lead with more doc style storytelling, and I can get highlights within that. Versus when I do it the opposite way, all we have is highlights.
Absolutely.
And if we want to dig a little bit deeper or even just be different than what everyone else is doing, because now everyone has a platform, every player, every team, the colleges, right? Even the agents, everybody has content now, the trainers. So, you know, being able to kind of separate yourself in that way, I think is important. And like you said, at the end of the day, I think it's also by having that difference of creative, being able to bring what they like to do and how they like to shoot or how they like to capture to the forefront, and not just saying like, we're going to do it this way, because you also kind of get stuck in that space of not being able to allow other things to naturally unfold. That, man, I love working with other creatives that are like from all different types of backgrounds. Because I just feel like we learn so much, right? Like I got kids with me that are like 17, 18 helping me with stuff just because their perspective is different. Mm-hmm. Their world is also different now too. Like they grew up in a completely digital world, and I'm like, well, I'm not that old, but I still remember a rotary phone and all this other stuff. Right. And so like, I've seen every aspect of it, but you guys, all you know is iPhones and right. Instagram. You know, I remember MySpace when we had to make our own pages and add music and right. So it's like, I'm okay with that.
You're dating all of us.
But it's real, right? Yeah. And so when you think about that and you think about how you walk into a lot of these rooms, like that was one of the first thing I noticed, especially in sports, is respectfully, everyone's white older men.
It was that way for a while.
And there's a standard. There's a way that you have to behave. There's a way that you need to move. There's a way that you need to interact and engage with athletes or just whoever it may be, talent, whatever. And I think that like now just seeing the diversity of the space, whether it be male, female, whether it be former athlete, not former athlete, whether it be young, old, when you merge that all together, I think what you get out of it is so much better than when one side just kind of has that wall up of like, no, this is how we've been doing it, or this is how I want to do it because it's my vision and it's what's in my head. And that's the thing too, is like that I try to stay away from. You're not really going to be able to replicate what's in my head. And for a long time, I was like struggling with that. I still struggle with it now, even just from like how organized I am and stuff like that. I'm just like, I can't make another me. And I've had to kind of step back and realize that because, again, you just don't see the world that everyone else sees it. And now you will get some people that as a group, we may kind of get it together, but they still are not like identical to you in a way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So
you made a good point about the expectation on the men's side and then the warmth on the women's side. So I worked in, I worked primarily like half the year with women's sports when I was in college, right? And you do see that shift, like that appreciation. That's why I never, you know, like, oh, you want to send me to tennis? Like, no, I love tennis. So if
I'm going, like,
volleyball, oh, I love that. But the appreciation, like when you were an athlete and you, mm-hmm. you know, whether it was a newspaper or somebody was in the gym with, mm-hmm. with a camera, did you kind of feel that same appreciation? Like, oh, they're actually going to cover this? Or because obviously in the last 8 years or so, it is, you know, yeah. people have started to double down, especially in the last yeah. 4 or 5 in the W, which we'll get mm-hmm. to. But there is more of a focus now. And mm-hmm. now the conversation's kind of, but did you feel that same kind of feeling when someone did come in and cover a game or something like that for you?
Not necessarily. I think because when I played, it was a time where it didn't really exist at all. Mm-hmm. Not as accessibly as it is now. I felt like, and I still feel this way, I felt like our game was always talked about different. Mm-hmm. It was always covered different. And it still is now. Like even with the rise of attention to women's college sports or women's, you know, professional sports, how people go about talking about the game is still secondary to how it's covered for men. And there is still a double standard. And also understanding that like the way that you talk to and handle women also looks completely different than men. And I have a friend, you know, he's definitely a good guy, great stand-up guy, but he covers NBA a lot, right? And I remember we had a conversation with the young woman and he was like, man, look at your hands. Like, did you hoop? You got good hands. And he offended her. And he didn't realize because he's like, man, that's a big deal. Like in the NBA, a dude with like big hands, like, you know, you're thinking about people like Kawhi and Rondo, right? And all these guys who, that's a great attribute to have. But for a woman, right? Like that's not necessarily something that is like a compliment, right? And so I think just like, because it hasn't happened for so long, I think there is that disconnect. And I think that that is changing with education and just more of the comfortability and also just frequently seeing more and more people cover. But for me, I felt that more, like I said, when I played than necessarily we weren't getting covered at all. I think it is still a huge disparity, even though it seems visibly different. There is still a huge disparity. And then there's also a disparity in what we choose to cover. I think that it's easy to look at numbers and it's easy to say there's more people because, again, what you've been presented with is the top 1%. But when the top 1% is not being covered, you realize that there is still a gap. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'll give you a perfect example. UCLA women's basketball right now is number one in the country.
Yep.
No one's talking about it.
Right.
But the hype train, respectfully, is with USC mm-hmm. because they have Juju, right? Absolutely. And Juju is an amazing player.
Absolutely.
But Lauren Betts might be a number one draft pick in her draft, right?
Could be, yeah.
And so when you look at, again, it's how the sport is covered. Yes, it's growing. Yes, and we love it. Like, I'm not complaining. But again, it's more the how than it is now we're here, mm-hmm. right? Because you don't hear about anything else other than the hype.
Because that's what they're used to.
You know what I mean? And so yeah. I think that's the shift. Yeah. Yeah. And it's easier to do, right? Like it's easier to go after, you know, the people who are the most popular. That's like the easy way to get in. The work actually comes when you go cover the people who are really talented that don't have all of that hype, but may still kind of get there. Because even with Juju, like I've seen Juju play since she was like 7th grade. Nobody was going to Juju's games. She'd been number one in the country since she was in 7th grade. Mm. She's been killing people since she was in 7th grade. Nobody came until that kind of hype grew, right? And she was in the same city with the Bronnies and the BJ Bostons and the Sierra Canyons, right? Like out here in California, those games were like a huge deal. If they played against a Montverde Academy or something like that, everybody was at those games. But Sierra Canyon and even Juju when she was at Wynwood played a lot of good talent too. Nobody ever came, right? So again, it's more so to reiterate, it's all about the how than necessarily like I think the huge disparity for me at least.
I want to ask about your your background a little bit more, because you said you went to school for graphic design, you shoot photos, you shoot video. That's having the ability to create mixed media in that way, or think about it from each different angle. I'd love to hear your perspective on how each one of those disciplines helps you create content in your voice today.
I think like it's allowed me to be versatile, but I also feel like at times it's hindered me because I don't necessarily feel like I'm a specialist at anything. But I do feel like because I have the ability to do a little bit of everything, I also probably get more gigs. I feel like I can assimilate a little better to different environments versus like, you know, it's always the struggle when you have the photographer who's never shot video because they're afraid. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to get a photographer to flip over because that fear of like messing up, or they just not seen it and it seems like it's this tough. Same thing with like people who maybe they just shoot, but they don't edit, right? There's always kind of that fear factor that comes into play. And I think for me, because I've done a little bit of everything, it just, like I said, it allows me to kind of navigate the different spaces with a little bit more confidence. I think as far as like the technical aspect of it, because I started more so in graphic design, I think that helped me with composition a little bit more and how I thought about attacking just angles, or how I line up a shot, or even like how I crop a photo and stuff like that. If I want to add text, if I want to add some type of texture and all these different things, I think having that foundation and graphic design kind of help with that, especially now too, because everything social based is, you know, graphics or video, even motion picture. I wish like at the time that I went to school, I would have done a little bit more with like motion graphics and stuff like that. Just because that's a huge thing now, like moving text and kinetic text and just different objects and stuff. But I think it's definitely helped. I think it also helps, again, kind of just seeing things a little bit different, right? Because if you can see how something is going to move in your final edit, you can think about, even if you can't actually do it, I know I can go tell somebody this is what I want to happen and I can pay somebody to do it for me. Right. and so I think that's kind of gone a long way. And it goes back to my point of working with different types of people. I think, you know, for me, the best projects come out when you can add all those different elements, you know, to that final piece, whether it be, you know, visual effects, some type of design or whatever, even like still photography, being able to do image sequences and just cool things with imagery. I think that just makes the work so much better.
You know, alluded to, you're not from LA. What went into the decision to make that move? I mean, you know, usually people make that move if they want to, you know, get into music, or if they want to get into Hollywood, you know, make movies. What was your inspiration or motivation to, you know, move out west?
The biggest thing, honestly, was just change of scenery. I'm from the Midwest. It's super slow. And I just never felt like I fit in that box of slowness. And then I think also just like, once you see the world a little bit more, you get a bigger perspective of what's out there. And I just knew that like growing up in Wisconsin was not gonna be my final stop. In college, I had traveled out to California and some other places. So for a while it was between here and then also Atlanta, where my brother stays in Georgia. And I felt like Georgia at the time, I felt like it was a little too slow. And so I was like, okay, I'll go here. And then also like weather came into play. It's like, do I just take dry heat or do I take humidity? What do I want to deal with? And so, and my best friend at the time who I moved with, he had already kind of moved out here before and kind of took a dive at it. And so it was just like the place to go. There was not necessarily any big thing. Like, I had no goal. It was just, I want to go live somewhere else. It was not me moving to work, me moving to do anything. We just didn't want to be in Wisconsin. And so we just packed up our stuff and left. Me and my best friend, his brother. And yeah, we've been here ever since. And I think for us, like, I don't know if I would be in the position that I'm in if not for moving here. Simply because of proximity to everything. I think just the way of life, at least for me and people that I feel like are kind of in that young adult age, there's just so much more to do. And then I think like the type of people, like you said, everyone's coming out here to do something. A lot of times it's, you know, music or movies or, you know, whatever. And I think just kind of having that will to want to do more in your life, like, especially for young adults, like everybody is trying to go after it. Like, I just kind of thrive in spaces like that. And then I think now in retrospect, I'm happy too, because there's just so much diversity here. And I think I was so closed off to the rest of the world in the sense of like, I didn't have the enlightenment about other cultures and what other people experienced, how other families operated, just like all these different things, different types of foods and all that. Like, it's just so different. And I'm grateful for that now, because it's like that stuff again has kind of changed my perspective on everything.
It's interesting to hear you talk about having no intention or connection really to move out west.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me wonder, how did you get connected to be able to work with Kobe then? How did you make that connection?
God, to be honest, like there was not that. I'm here, honestly, because of the grace of God. I think that like every opportunity that I've had, has kind of already been set out for me. I'm not someone that, I'm not in your DMs asking, hey, let's go shoot. I'm not reaching out to brands and companies, pitch decking. I'm not really doing anything. Almost everything that I have gotten up until this point, along with my brother, like has just been naturally through connection. Again, right place, right time type of situation. And so, again, that's another reason why in retrospect, I'm happy we moved here, because when I talk about proximity, that's really all that it was for the Kobe situation. A friend of mine, he was playing against their team when they were super young, was like, hey, you want to come shoot the game? And we went and shot his game. And again, not going at it from like, Kobe's my favorite player, right? So not going in there, though, being like, oh, my God, it's Kobe, right? Going in there, doing our job, going in there, like taking care of my friend, making sure he got his pictures, right? Because to be honest, most people in that situation, he probably wouldn't have got his pictures. Someone walking in the gym seeing Kobe and they're here to do something else, especially back then. Mm-hmm. It's like, dang, my bad, bro. Like, I dropped the ball on that. But like, that wasn't our mentality, right? It was like, oh, like, this is cool. Like, we're going to come. We're going to capture this. And then just over time, you know, parents would hit us up and stuff like that. Say, hey, we're playing on this day, whatever. We never really had initially direct even communication with them. And so it was a thing that I think just kind of naturally happened. And then, you know, after a while, it was like, hey, can you guys shoot this for us? And so, you know, in retrospect now, it's like, I know that he was kind of paying attention to the work we were doing and stuff like that. But it was not a situation where it was like, hey, we're going to give you Kobe, come over and do this. Or we are reaching out to him and saying, hey, like, we want to shoot it. It just was, it naturally happened. And that's how most, like I said, honestly, most of the stuff that I've gotten from a professional aspect has kind of fell into place. And I like it that way, but I also feel like at times that has hindered me, because I'm not someone that's going to reach out, ask for favors. I'm not going to pitch you on something. And I know that I could probably have a lot more work if I did that, probably a lot more opportunities, but I just like things to naturally come my way, because I like to have discernment about who I'm working with. I like to make sure that it's going to be a good fit. I always say this, I'm a very emotional creative. Like, if I'm not having fun, you're not going to get my best work. Like, I'm not the creative that does this for money. And so you kind of have people who are just like, show up and do it because this is your job. I'm not that person. Like, I have to really be invested in, even if it's just like the overall purpose, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be the project, right? I may not necessarily want to go film middle school kids playing football. But, you know, if the passion behind the project and the purpose behind it, the person who's asking me to come shoot it is a dope person, then I can buy into that. But I'm not attaching myself to things that, like, you know, just don't make sense for me. And so I think that's hindered me, but I've also gotten my best moments from that.
Yeah, I hear a lot of me in that, because, you know, I could be pitching and, you know, like putting myself out there, but I also feel, you know, very similar, is a lot of what I get is brought to me because that's what is supposed to happen, kind of thing. So,
yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's a, I worked at Apple, and they used to tell us, like, that's a, it's not necessarily a positive trait per se, right? Because it's like, you want to be able to inform people of your greatness. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to inform people of, like, how good of a job you do and whatever it is that it is. It could be, you know, a normal 9-to-5 job. It could be creativity, whatever. And so not having the ability to do that has always been something that I've actually had to work on. And even there, it would be like, man, this is something you got to be able to tell us that you had this great moment with this customer, mm-hmm. right? You did this. And for me, it's like, I don't want to tell you about all these great things I've done, you know, but it's like, sometimes you kind of have to. Yeah. And if we look at it, the people who are advocating for themselves, honestly, they do go farther a lot of times just because they're speaking up, you know, they're putting PR campaigns together of stuff that they're done. You know, you got production companies that are sending decks out and saying, yo, this is the stuff we've done. That's how you go get a big gig. I mean, even the kid who did the video for USC football, like, they talk about that, and he reached out and pitched them, and that thing broke the internet.
Yeah.
So it's like, we could be sitting here on these great ideas or wanting to work with somebody, but because we're too humble, or you just, you know, not want to step outside of yourself, you know, we may be losing a lot of opportunities because of that. You know what I mean? So yeah. It's a balance.
So with that, We're not going to play the game yet, but we're going to play a little game of hypotheticals here. Let's mm-hmm. say that you were to pitch a project, and you were mm-hmm. to pitch it to someone or a corporation. Mm-hmm. Who would you step out of your comfort zone to pitch a project to work with?
To work with?
Yes. To do a project for, whether that's video, whether that's photo, whether that's a magazine. If you had to say, hey, I'm going to this one shot, I'm stepping out to pitch this person.
That's tough.
I mean, and the crazy thing is, you work with tough. A lot of great people.
I don't necessarily know if I have people. I do. So, like, I've pitched things to athletes personally. And it's been like conversations of, yeah, like, that would be dope. I don't know if there's like one major athlete that I would want to necessarily pitch, as opposed to like more ideas. I would say maybe telling the story a little bit more of like Cheryl Swoops and some of those players. I think now, as like women's basketball is on the rise, the one thing we lack is the history of it. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lot of information out on, like, there's a lot of people disrespecting these players, man.
They don't know.
And it's like, these are goats we talking to. Mm. You know what I mean? And so, like, if there was something that I can pitch around that for sure would be a thing. Like Cynthia Cooper, Cheryl Swoops, Tina Thompson, all those women, Tisha Pinachero, like Katie Smith. Like, there's a ton of women who, I mean, even Becky Hammon, like, people don't know, mm-hmm. you know. And just also, like, I think the difference of their game, you know, and having to go overseas to get a bag. And then they went overseas and kind of came and got those players and said, hey, we're going to start a league. I just think there's so many lost stories in that. So I think from a topic standpoint, that's probably more important for me than necessarily a person. Trying to think if there's anything else. I've always wanted to cover somebody's like WNBA draft process. I think playing professional sports overseas is a huge one. It doesn't matter who the athlete is. I think if you can get a big athlete, the story kind of aligns, but maybe doing like a story that has three subjects. It could be a woman and two men. It could be two women and a guy. It could be different sports, but just how crazy it is playing that sport overseas. Like, my nephew's playing soccer overseas right now. My other nephew plays basketball overseas. There's a ton of people, obviously, playing basketball overseas, even football. And it's a whole different world, right? It's a whole different type of culture shock. You're alone. Sometimes you can't always take your family with you. And I just don't think we get those stories enough. So that's something big that I would say I've wanted to work on as of late. I don't think there's an athlete or anybody that I'm like, nah. Because I think that the stories, like,
yeah.
It don't really matter who it is.
Right.
And one thing I've been preaching recently, and I know people are probably tired of me saying it, is that the reality is we relate more to losers. And we keep telling the story of triumph mm-hmm. and winning yep. and the superstars and the top 1%, but everybody on the planet, we actually relate more to losing. Mm-hmm. And I say that under the microscope of obviously just that subjective, right? You know, at the end of the day, your journey, there's going to be wins in what you see. But when we're talking about like that top moment, there's not a lot of people that have championships. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of people who have won a national championship, an NBA championship, a Super Bowl, right? How many times have people gone to the Super Bowl and not won, right? And we hear more of the Super Bowl winner than we hear about that person that just couldn't cross the line.
Yep.
And that is actually what we relate to as people more often than not. I cannot relate to LeBron's story, but we'll get a bunch of LeBron documentaries when he's done.
Absolutely.
And we need them, but we also need the other stuff. Yeah. I need to be able to see one of my favorite movies growing up was Hoop Dreams. I don't think any of them paid off, because that was more relatable. You see more people like that are trying to make it in their sport that don't get to that next level that you don't even know where they went half the time.
Right.
You're like, dang, man, this kid was good. What happened to him?
It's a lot of them out there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you 30 seconds and we're going to play a little game here. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a little different than how we usually do it, because sometimes it's like, hey, what's in your bag? But you're so well-rounded. We're going to have a little have a little fun. And I did not prepare for this. So it's going to be even more fun. So you're going to have 30 seconds. And it's going to be a little game of this or that. And it's off the dome. Mm-hmm. First thing that comes to mind.
All right, let's do it.
All right. WNBA or NBA?
WNBA.
Photo or video?
Video.
Graphic design or portraits?
Portraits.
Live or post-production?
Live.
Long form or short form? I know the answer.
Long form.
If you could go anywhere in the world right now to work, where would it be?
Like another country? Dubai.
Oh, that's great. That's 30 seconds. But that's fast. You're pretty, Dubai would be amazing to do.
I think that'd be kind of cool.
So one question, because you also talked about, you know, choosing the story versus choosing the highlight, right? Because highlights are, and you mentioned, you know, football creative being a lot, especially in the college aspect. I think one reason is because football only has one game and college often has two at least and maybe three. So it's like,
yeah, you only got a short, it's usually like, at least two per week.
So the window is much shorter. So
yeah,
we've seen a shift all the way to social media. A vertical video only, but now you're starting to see a pendulum swift back to long form, back to the, you know, the YouTube, back to,
yeah.
Does that make you happy knowing that, you know,
absolutely,
that will still get, there's still space for that?
Yeah. I think that like, I think the vertical video stuff has like really gotten us in a chokehold. And then just the infinite scroll. It's crazy. Like just in everyday life, you look around and everyone's scrolling and it's just the next video. We're not even reading captions. Like we're literally just, we're not watching videos with the sound on. Like, and I just think that that has really like shape shifted our brains. And for me, like it's one of the reasons I haven't adopted to TikTok yet. Like I'll have my moments where I'm on there for like maybe 5-10 minutes max, but I can't bring myself to minimize my brain to only process 15 seconds, 20 seconds. Because you saw like when Vine became a thing, Vine was really cool because it was like they had 6 seconds to be super funny.
To get straight to it.
Right. And then Instagram's like, all right, we're adding 15 second video. And they're like, ah, people are asking for a little bit longer. So we're going to a minute. And then they're like, ah, well, the people who are getting only a minute are complaining. So let's start this IGTV thing.
Flop.
And it's going to have its own app. Then we're scrapping that and we're going to this. And then when TikTok really came into the picture, and I feel like did it right, even TikTok now, it's like you could post, what, an hour now on TikTok?
I would.
Because there is still a place for the long form stuff. Yeah. But we've really like put everything in this small box of like, this is the one place that everyone wants to get it. So that's like, I think that also has not necessarily killed long form, but the idea of like never wanting a person to leave your app. So you think about Instagram, for example, they want everything in the app. Mm-hmm. You want to shop in the app. You want to watch this in the app, right? There's all these things. And so now, like, I think we've lost a little bit of being able to get to the long form or get to the other thing outside of it. Go onto a website and shop and do all those things. Yeah. So I'm happy it's coming back just for the attention span and the breaking up of being able to get back to doing a little bit. Like, it to me, like, when people are like, if you don't want to flip your phone, that's lazy. That's crazy. That's crazy to me. Right. You don't want to just flip your phone sideways and watch a video. And the fact that I even have to do that and I don't have an option to just tap and it goes sideways is also crazy. That's my biggest gripe with a lot of the vertical video is if someone wants to stick to the horizontal side of it, cool, but give them the option. We've almost taken away the option. Mm-hmm.
And put in a box.
I think Facebook might be one of the only platforms where, like, you can actually tap to go wide and watch the video like normal. But to me,
you might be able to do it on X. I can't remember.
Changing the culture, crazy. Like, I love it. Like, bring it back. I want to see longer work. That's just been me, though. I love movies. I love TV shows and stuff like that. So, like, I don't really, you know, I get a little fix from some of the short stuff, but. Like, I always end up feeling like I needed a little bit more.
Yep.
And so it's more so just about the option. Like, I think short the vertical videos, the short form content, I think is great. But I just want the option. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, if a college football program puts out like something dope, I don't want to have to. If I don't have to, I would be OK with staying in the app and you just let me turn it sideways and I can watch the video from there. But I got to go to YouTube. I got to go to this. If I want to watch it bigger, I got to pull it up on TV. But I don't complain about it because that's what I want to see. Right. And so I think we kind of have lost that ability because of how much we've focused so much on like the vertical video and keeping it in one place. And then like the apps kind of competing with each other. If you got the TikTok language on your video, now we're going to, you know. Shadow ban it from the site. You know, there's just so much, especially like this is such a creator economy now. And it's like you're making the work just so much more extra when it's like somebody wants to be able to just put that video in one place. Now we got to make 17 formats of it.
Absolutely. Which is bonkers.
Facebook is capping it off. If you do it as a reel, it's only a minute. If you do it as a regular post, you can do it normal, but they don't get visibility. Like there's just too many rules.
The politics of revenue.
It's crazy, yeah, right?
That's crazy. You talk about rules a lot on some of the podcasts and stuff that and content that you put out.
Yeah.
If you could get rid of, aside from this one, if you could get rid of one like barrier or rule, what would it be?
On social? Or just in general?
In the creative space. It could be in social. It could be in... you know, opportunity, it could be anything.
I think I don't know, it's tough because I try to be devil's advocate in a lot of situations. But I think just being a little less harsh in sports about the barrier between the creative and their work. And I know traditionally, like, right, the team owns the IP, the company, you know, depending on the contract, owns the IP and all that. But I think in today's world, we're really in a crappy gray area as creatives because especially for like young adults who may not necessarily have a background in anything else, as they like try to make money and live as the cost of living goes up, like they got to oftentimes go out and get a real job. And a lot of times that job is in sports. And you go work for a sports team and you're doing this dope thing, but you never really get to showcase it. You can't post it on your account, right? They're like, nope. Some teams kind of let people do their thing. But for the most part, there's this wall of like, it's ours. It's mine. And y'all don't need to be posting. And I just feel like in this world now where creative is just so important, especially from a social and digital landscape, it's like, it just helps the creative to be able to showcase their talent. Now, I do think that that can also get a little gray, because it's like, are you here just showcasing that you shot, you know, LeBron, for example, and that's all you're posting on your page? Or are you genuinely showcasing your work? Right. So there is that, where it's like sometimes it is easier to kind of stay black and white because you don't want to have to micromanage that. But I think if somehow we can find a way just to allow, or even like if teams and brands and stuff could showcase their creatives a little bit more, I think that would help, because the reality is it's not a ton of money in just doing like social edits, unless it is a big brand partnership. Mm-hmm. Or you actually like are on salary working for a company of some kind. There's money, but not in the way that like I think most young up and coming people think that there is, right? So everyone's going and getting a camera now because, you know, they think that there's a bag here and they're back there, or chasing high school athletes or whatever it may be. And like, you'll ask people like, bro, like, what's your situation? And some people are like down bad. Like, hey, I got to get a job. Right. And so when you're a super talented person and then you got to go get a job, and let's just say, for example, it is sports, you can't even showcase your work. So you kind of end up being in this gap where, do you stay with this company for money? Do you stay with this team for money? Or do you just go do your freelancing life? And I think that is something that freelancers oftentimes have such a battle with, mm-hmm. because it's like, man, I'm tired of being under the confinement and the rules of this space, and I just want to go do my own thing. But then sometimes when you go and do your own thing, like, being a freelancer is not for the weak. It is not for the weak. You know what I mean? So it's not super easy. And then if you don't have like the knowledge, and again, it may be a proximity thing. For me, a lot of the young people that I see getting into the space, they're getting in social first, and they don't have jobs initially, right? So they're not learning some of the qualities that a professional actually would need. And that, so that's the other side of it. Like, I know some people that are super talented, have applied to colleges, and the college is like, no, you don't have your degree. But I know that this person is better than who y'all got right now, right? But then also on the flip side, you kind of are like, I don't even know if you want that job, because they're only making $35,000. Mm-hmm. The cost of living out here is crazy. You can't survive on $30,000 a year. Right. So, again, that's that constant battle. It's like, I don't know, pay the creatives more or something. There's got to be some give and take. Like, if I'm making $100,000 working for USC and I can't post, cool, because you're paying for it at least.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. But if you're only paying me $35,000, but you're working me like a slave, I got to be at every single game. I got to post all day. We don't actually have a staff. I'm the one person for the entire athletic department covering multiple teams, and I'm making $35,000 to $40,000, and I can't post.
Right.
You're putting me in a rock, between a rock and a hard place. And I think that is the part that I see. If we could change anything, maybe start there.
Yeah. And I think to further your point, I think that conversation has to start happening from bottom up, middle up, top down,
somewhere up, that,
right? Because there is a difference where kind of the same freelance, right? Let's say that you're freelancing, you go shoot this tournament, and they're paying you to take photos for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or pay to do video. But then you're holding on to their content, putting it on your page first to like try to get to the next.
Yeah, thing. See, and that's and some etiquette. Right. We lose we etiquette. Have,
not we only do they have to pay more, but we got to also have some etiquette too to say, hey, like this.
Exactly.
School first.
Yeah.
Like if you're working for a school, I worked for three of them. It was a lot different, you know, 10, 14, 15 years ago. I'm losing count of when I first started.
Yeah.
15.
Yeah.
It was a lot different. Like the school was the priority. I was there for the school. Social media hadn't taken off. Like Vine may have been a thing, but we were slowly doing things. But I think that a lot of the creatives, they forget that, hey, you signed up for this job. and like so have funny. A little etiquette. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey,
I know.
Get your work done over here. But you have this constant, hey, tag the photographer, tag the videographer, tag the editor. It's like, if they let's balance it out. And
yeah,
and
there has to be some balance.
But people don't want balance a lot of times.
Yeah.
They just want.
I've been on all sides of it where I get it too. Like, I think the thing with the tag the photographer, me personally, I think it should be more of like a person to person type of thing as opposed to like a brand.
Yep.
Like if you're an athlete and you've asked this person to come and shoot for you and to do XYZ, you know how far that tag can go. And I'm not gonna lie, and I probably speak for a lot of creatives, we know when you're trying to hide us,
absolutely,
right? So you go tag in the corner of the photo that no one's gonna tap on and see.
Right.
Or do you tag in the caption? And I think that is something that it's not even about the credit. It's about how far that can go in a space that's not really built around money for creatives.
Right.
It's built around money for you.
Absolutely.
Right. And so I get that part, especially from young people who a lot of times they're probably being underpaid. Because I'll be honest with you. Like I've gotten to a point where I've categorized my work as logo work and no logo work. You don't ever have to tag me in no logo work. If it is a Nike ad or something crazy, or even if you just paid a high ticket, I don't care if you tag me.
Because you got the brick.
I got the money. It doesn't matter. Like, we're going to keep doing business. This is now a thing. Like, it's not that deep, right? Because you have to pick your battles. You're going to spend all day chasing tags and chasing all that stuff. It just does you a disservice at the end of the day. And you also don't want to turn into that creative that everyone's like avoiding now because you're always in the caption or complaining about being tagged.
Right.
And then it's the other side of it where if I did you a favor, the least you could do is tag me or keep my logo. And I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't tag me, that's fine. But like, honestly, in this space, you have a lot of people intentionally cropping out logos, not wanting to give credit. And 9 times out of 10, if the logo is on it, it means you didn't pay enough for me to take it off.
Mm.
So tag. This is the least you can do. Because again, we go back to the conversation of the gray area with creatives. This is how they make their money. So it's just a help, right? I promise you, if an athlete or some type of entertainer or whoever it may be, you have 1 million followers, the moment you put that person's tag in your caption, you could change their life.
Absolutely.
You could change their life. And that is, I think, where some of that is kind of stems from is people feel a bit salty about that because it's like, man. But then you also have, you know, like I said, we chase clout a little bit too much. I had a conversation with a kid I mentor a couple days ago, just about the main character energy is kind of what we call it. And I think like for a lot of creatives in the past, you were seen as not necessarily the help, but you were behind the scenes. Right. And so when you came and you shot something, you didn't need to be the center of attention around the content that was put out. And now it's shifted. Right now, creatives want to be the center of attention in the work, as opposed to the subject matter itself or like the dope, you know, photo or video or whatever was put out. Right. And so that, I think, causes some of that frustration, like you mentioned, and not having the etiquette, because it's like, if I go shoot a wedding, what do I look like posting the dang wedding photos before they even did? Right.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy, you know, but again, I think that also goes back to a lot of times because of now with us being in such a social world, we're social first as opposed to like going into a job environment and learning how to have that type of etiquette, have that type of professionalism, learn kind of the do's and don'ts before getting in situations where we may get a good gig where that type of stuff isn't warranted. You know what I mean? And so, and it's not to bash on young adults because it could be anyone, any age. It's more so just, I think in the past, you know, we always had this system of you go to school. Once you graduate, you get a job, you do these things, you learn how to be a professional in the professional world. And that's gone now. We don't need to go to school anymore to have our dreams come true.
Yeah.
And so in saying that, I think we lose a bit of the professionalism behind it. So
let's talk two things. What would be, I mean, we kind of alluded to some of that, but if you could give advice to young Janine or up and coming creatives, and especially since it's Black History Month, like Black creatives about, you know, preparing themselves for the space or, you know, or anything, what would be the best piece of advice that you could hand out to those two individuals?
I don't think young Janine I would tell to do anything different, but I would probably start earlier. I think that my path has been perfectly imperfect, to be honest. And I don't want to be like super cliche, but I don't think that there's any other advice I would give myself other than maybe from like an actual business standpoint. It's like when you decide to be a formal business, like go learn business first. That might be the only thing. But as far as like the overall process and the journey, to be honest, like I think the journey is exactly what it's supposed to be. That, you know, figuring it out, making mistakes and all of that. So it's tough to say, at least for me, anything advisory about the process because I've appreciated every part of it. And again, maybe like to my point earlier, speaking up a little bit more about different things, like not being afraid to say, hey, let's work together, or not being that stubborn. But again, like I'm appreciative of the fact that I have everything that I almost wanted. You know what I mean? My advice to somebody else would be just to go do it and not make excuses. I would say take advantage of every moment and opportunity that you have, because tomorrow it could be gone. And I've had like slight conversations about stuff like this with like, okay, what happens if social media disappears? Or, you know, what happens if this one person that you're working with, you know, just decides tomorrow they don't want to work with you? Like, how are you going to go about that? And I think like for a lot of people new into the space, I think not necessarily putting all your eggs in one basket is important. But I think just appreciating the moments that you have. And especially now, too, with like people in sports, because obviously that's who I'm around a lot. You're covering this athlete. You're working with this athlete and he or she might get traded. And now like everything is uprooted. Right. You just never know. Right. Even like with TikTok, it's like TikTok being shut down. Like some people who deleted the app can't even get it back. Right. And it's like if you put all your eggs in that basket, now what do you kind of have left? And also like understanding that at any point the brands could stop, they could demonetize the apps. They don't have to pay us to post. They could say, you know what, we're only paying brands, we're not paying individuals, right? So there's a lot of things that I think we take for granted, even the opportunities that we get, right? Being able to shoot certain things. I know a ton of people who are shooting games that are not necessarily working for LA Times or a Getty or something like that. And at times have been frustrated with not getting credentialed, but it's like, that's a privilege, right? And so you got to be grateful for every moment that you get to be able to do the thing that hopefully you love. If you don't love it, then cool, like go about it a certain way. But I think for the people that are passionate about the work, just appreciate it, go all in. And time goes by fast too. Like I'm looking at it and it's like already 2025, right? So the time that you have to do the work, you know, if once you dive in, it'll go by so fast. And then I would say the last thing would be in knowing that, take time for yourself, especially if you freelance. You gotta have that work-life balance. You gotta, like, I can't tell you the last time I took a vacation where I absolutely did nothing. It might have been like 2018 or something, where I just took some time and no work, no computer. I mean, even companies now, they're like, if you're going on vacation, take your work computer. It's a crazy concept to me. But, you know, we got to do that. So, yeah, that's my two cents.
What's been a favorite project of yours that you've worked on that holds a special place in your portfolio?
I think the most fun project that I've had recently was working with EA Sports. Last summer, I did a project with them. They were sponsoring a team that was going over to the UK to play against the NFL Academy. It was a high school team called Edgewater based out in Orlando. And I got to do the social aspect of it. They did more of a kind of like a doc style piece but I was like in front of the camera and kind of like stepping outside of myself. So it was fun to be not necessarily uncomfortable, but to be doing something different. But then also just to be doing something other than basketball and to be immersed in it. Like I've shot football stuff. I've done like some different training camps and events and stuff like that. But like to literally be immersed in their culture from sun up to sundown, like that was cool for me. And it just gave me like a different point of view of just the different types of things that they go through on a day-to-day basis. Different bond. I got close with a lot of the kids. We had fun when we went to the UK. Like we got to spend time in London and that was dope. So that was the most fun I've had in a while, especially, like I said, because it was just so different from what I'm used to doing.
So the one thing I will close us out with, first of all, thank you for being on the show. It was great to, like, I followed you for years and you probably didn't even know it. Of just following your journey, seeing a lot of your work. But as a former athlete, as a Black creative, what does it mean to you to be a Black creative in this sports space?
I think the biggest thing for me is really representation. I think especially being a woman too, like you don't see it a lot of shoots that I'm on, a lot of events, I'm surrounded by men. And so for me, I think that is just a testament to things kind of changing and opening up a little bit more, but I also feel like I have kind of like a purpose. And so I think that my voice is just so different in the room of everyone else. And so like I take pride in that. Like I said, I think diversity tells the best stories, and it doesn't have to look the way that everybody thinks it looks, right? It doesn't have to be about race, but I think just the diversity in opinion, diversity in age, diversity in race, diversity in just background, where you grew up, all of that, I think it just helps for a great story. I think for my friend group, I think that I have kind of set the tone for honestly, a lot of us Black creatives having a presence and being able to be taken serious in a lot of spaces where prior we never got the opportunity to be there. And then I think from the standpoint of women's sports specifically, I think it's huge because nobody looks like me typically as a creative. And it's weird because especially with women's basketball, it's made up of predominantly Black women and girls. And so, again, it's all about representation. My wallpaper on my computer is going to be more representation. That's going to stay that way for a long time because I think that you have to have that. I think the stories are different, but they're more authentic when they're told by people who can relate to what that experience is. You know, and I don't say that, again, just simply from race because, you know, if I'm telling a story about a mom, I can't relate. I don't have children, right? And so it hits a little different when sometimes you have someone that is representative of the story you're trying to tell, being able to be a part of that process. And so I'm grateful for the opportunities that I've had to be able to continue to work with different people, work at different types of events. I used to do this golf tournament every year. I'm one of the only Black people there, let alone like the person with the camera. And it's been amazing, right? Because again, it's just about gaining perspective and all these different things. And I feel like for me personally, I think I assimilate to most environments well. And I think because of that, I've been able to be super cultured and be able to kind of carry myself a certain way in different environments and stuff like that, and be able to have an impact and be able to speak from different sides of everything, you know? So yeah, that's one thing that I do take pride in, and I'm not necessarily screaming it from the rooftops, but I think you can see it in everything that I do.
Amazing answer, and that wraps everything. No, for real, thank you for, you know, carving out some time
to
hop on with us. This is, you know, it's awesome to just and that's the thing, is like even with this podcast, like we try to get different people, so it's not just people in the NFL, not just people in the NBA, it's not just men, it's not just like, because the world operates so much better when it's not just a one-way avenue, right?
Yeah. So. And it's also like so different because like I can only speak to my proximity. Mm-hmm. It might look completely different for somebody else. Yeah. Like, and someone may hear me talk and be like, oh, she's talking some nonsense. because that may not be their experience. Absolutely. Or vice versa. You know what I'm saying? Where it's like, dang, I didn't know it was like that.
And sometimes all you gotta do is take one quick step back and just listen. Like, oh, mm-hmm. maybe that's something that I should want to experience. Or like, mm-hmm. thankfully, I'm not in that situation.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because it looks different for everybody.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day.
Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives.
If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.